We are holding on Zion of a Bay's eight lines from the bottom, nine lines from the bottom. That's true. Mishnah has enough to begin of Ananis that if an animal falls into somebody's garden and has Hana, what kind of Hana we're going to talk about in a second. When we learned in the Mishnah, we assumed that it meant that the animal gained from there, that the animal had Hana, and that it fell on something soft rather than on the hard ground. That's what the Gemara is going to discuss over here about that. Mishalam is Mashananis, so the owner pays according to the Hana rather than according to the actual value of what it damaged. So, Amarav Benechita. This is talking about only if the animal. This is talking about if the animal got if the animal had it, if the animal fell on it and caused it to get and then caused the tevua or whatever is now embedded in the ground and therefore it's ruined. In other words, what we said, that it's gaining from the fact that like this, it would have fallen on the hard ground, it might have gotten killed, or even if not killed, it would have gotten injured. Like this, it walked away without a scratch. I will offer, but if the Hana, rather, is that after it fell in, it ate some of the fruit, I feel, well, actually, the Gemara is asking a question that R actually says that this is a continuation of Rav's statement, but Rashi explains that it's actually a question. Rav just said that only we're talking about Nefertah. So then the question is, what are you telling me?
That
got banged up. Yeah. So what are you telling me then? The implication, so what's the implication? That if the animal were to eat from the fruit, then you wouldn't even pay Mashanenis? Why not? Does that mean that Rav goes according to his own shita? We have the case in the previous parak where somebody brought his paters into somebody else's chaser, and an animal ate from them. The Bala Chotzer's animal ate from them and ended up getting injured by them, in the sense that the whatever it ate wasn't good for it. It gave stomach ache or whatever. So Rav had said, didn't have to eat. You can't make the owner of the grain or whatever it is chayav for that. On the face of it, here he's saying the same thing. He's saying that when the animal fell into the garden, but still,
Ayolah Shalatot. It didn't have to
eat. It didn't have to eat.
Well,
now,
No.
Here we're not talking about a pit. Here we're talking about it fell a foot or so into a garden, you know. It doesn't matter, though. No, the point is, first of all, the owner. What? Okay. The question, how does the Gemara think that? The question is, can you say that Rav is being consistent with his shitta? But the Ra'ah points out, why is the Gemara even asking the question? I mean, so what are you going to say? Every case of Shem V'Regel, can the owner of the animal argue Hayolah Shalatechel? Why should the Gemara even think that this should be, that we should apply that rule in this case? He says, because the difference is, in a normal case of Shem V'Regel, the point is that you're responsible because you were supposed to guard your animal, and you didn't. Which is why Shane Redegal was part of Rosh Hashanah, because your animal has every right to walk in Rosh Hashanah. But over here, you weren't responsible to supervise your animal because it fell in. You didn't allow it to go and eat from the food. It fell in. It was an accident. Therefore, the Gemara is arguing, maybe indeed we can apply the Hayolah Shalatechel.
The
Gemara
is saying,
yes, okay, fine. The point still remains that he's saying on his own part, yeah, my part didn't necessarily have to eat anything over here. Yeah. And that's the point. That's what it all says. You can't say that in a normal case of Shane Berego, because the Bala Gina can argue right back to him, yeah, but why didn't you walk your animal? In this case, the owner of the animal can say, I did walk my animal. It was an accident. It was an onus that it fell in there in the first place.
Because
it fell in, because the guineas are a foot lower than the sidewalk and it fell in. So fine, you're not responsible. It's not a border or anything like that. Because fine, you know, it's your property. You're not responsible to put up a fence or any such thing to prevent B'nai Rosh Hashanah from falling in. Fine, but on the other hand, on the face of it, it sounds like Rav is saying that the owner of the animal should be able to say, okay, it's true, my animal did end up eating, but after all, it only got in there by an onus in the first place. You can't hold me responsible for not guarding it. And once it's there, it's pretty much an automatic thing that an animal is going to eat.
So by that logic, you could say the animal fell by mistake, And then, for whatever reason, it could ignite a fire and burn the whole house or the whole, and it also would be hotter, according to that logic. Any damage that's caused after the fall.
So that's what we're going to talk about soon, about one aruga versus another. Wait, the point is, we're going to distinguish soon between, the Gemara is not going to talk about it explicitly, but before I explain the implication of what the Gemara is saying, that it depends how, one way of looking at it is it depends how soon can the owner have gotten there. In this case, we're talking about a felon, and right away it started eating. On the face of it, we're saying the owner is putter because he can't have been expected to be right there. He didn't know his animal was going to fall in. Again, an animal has a right owner to walk the owner with the animal. Yeah. Okay. Amri, for the answer, Hochi Hashta. How do you think to compare those? Yes, but the case over there is the case where the animal is the one that got the damage. Basically what you said, Vincian. Because then the owner of the parrot can say, I'm not going to pay for the fact that the animal got sick from the food. Because it shouldn't have been. Where would you ever think that Rav said such a thing when it comes to that the owner of the animal should have the ability to say such a thing? In our case. So you can't say that Rav is being consistent with his shitta. Fine, you can say, but that can't really be applied over here. Ella, so no, we can't say that's what Rav means. It cannot mean that he's saying that you pay Masha Nenet if it fell on the payers and damaged them, as opposed to it wouldn't pay anything if it ate the payers. No, rather it fell into the Gina either way. In other words, there's two possibilities. One, it fell into the Gina and the payers broke its fall, but in the process of it, the payers were damaged. And two, it fell on something else. It fell on soft ground or whatever. And afterwards, it started eating the payers. Ella, no. Rather, we have to understand Rav differently. What Rav is saying is one of these needless to say things. Needless to say, if the animal ate the payers, dimashalemus mashanenet, then no question about it. Then you pay mashanenet. You can't say, fine, you can't make him pay mashahizika, because the fact of the matter is it wasn't earnest that it fell in there in the first place. But on the other hand, it did have hanah, it did eat fruit, and now you gain from the fact that now you don't have to feed it later.
Why should you just say the anan without saying the nezek?
Because again, it was an oinus. Because it was an oinus. Again, shame the regel. Remember, the Torah uses the expression. We're going to deal with that soon. The Torah uses the expression by shame the regel. The shilach has beiroy ovir b'steachah. He lets loose his animal and it goes and pastures and grazes in somebody else's field. So it has to be. As we talked about this before, it has to be da'avit kain b'shilach. That has to be that he does it in a way that amounts to letting it loose. Not putting it behind a solid enough door, etc. Here, nothing of the sort. He was walking down the street. The person has every right to have his animals walk down the street. It fell in there. So therefore, you can't hold him responsible. You can't say that it was a shilach of beir, right? You can't make him chayev for the full amount of the nezek. However, the fact of the matter is the animal did benefit from the food that it ate. By eating the food. Because now you're gaining that you won't have to feed the animal later. So therefore, you're going to have to pay mashanet. So that's needless to say. But the point that Rav is trying to be mechadish is when it comes to the animal, when it comes to the payers broke the animal's fall, you might argue there is a reason to say that maybe the owner of the animal should be completely potter from paying. Maybe we should call this mavriach arim minichte chaderehu. This is like a case of somebody who scares off a lion from somebody else's nechassim. Meaning, I mean, the figure of speech is exactly what it sounds like. If you see a lion that's about to attack somebody else's property and you scare it off, the principle is, and Tosfos deals with it at great length. You can see here is a long Tosfos that takes up most of the Amud. So we'll talk a little bit about some of the interesting facets of the Tosfos. But the principle of it is you're not entitled to claim a reward from the owner of those nechassim for scaring off that lion. Therefore, by the same logic over here, Rashi says the reason is because he did a mitzvah. So by the same logic over here, you could say an animal is falling into your garden. You have the opportunity to do a mitzvah by the fact that your payrus broke his fall and prevented him from breaking his bones. You'd think maybe, therefore, you're not entitled to any compensation at all. Kamash Malon, that is Rav Siddush, that nevertheless he is entitled to compensation for Masha Nanis. So not to say that in that case you're chayiv for Masha Nanis, but if the eight you're potter, no, of course you're chayiv for eight. No, you're chayiv Masha Nanis, no question about that. But in this case, we don't say it's Mavriach Arim Nichzeh Chaver. Okay, so the question is, well, why not? Maybe indeed we should say that. Maybe we should call this Mavriach Arim Nichzeh Chaver. The answer is no. First of all, Mavriach Arim Nichzeh Chaver Mi Daita. Number one, the case of Mavriach Ari is where you did it with your own das. You knew that there was a lion there, and you scared it off. In this case, the owner of the field, the owner of the gina, the owner of the garden, didn't have any das. The animal fell in. He wasn't there. He wasn't there to see it happen.
He fell.
And the animal fell on its own. The bala gina had nothing to do with it. Inami, or another way of looking at it, mavriach hari minichta chaver less lepseda. The difference is when you're mavriach hari, you didn't lose anything by that. Therefore, you can argue you're not entitled. So in other words, so in the first difference, the point is, since me daito, you're willing to chase off that lion, it meant that you're willing to forego. No, obviously, we're talking about, we're talking about that you're able to do it without undue risk to yourself, whatever. It doesn't have to be an IV. If you want, think of a smaller animal, whatever. The principle is still the same. So in the first answer, the point is, since you did it me daito without saying ahead of time, I want compensation for this, then you're not entitled to compensation. We'll have a similar concept towards the end of the Masechta in the last parak, which actually was in today's Shlosh Prakim of Rambam. We'll have similar cases like that where a person voluntarily takes on a hezek for himself in order to save somebody else's nechassim. So the first way of looking at it in the Gemara, it depends whether it's midaita or not. The second way is mavriach hari minichsech haver less lepseda, that in that case you're not losing anything. It's lepseda, because in this case you suffered a monetary loss. You had these payers, and now they're ground down into the dirt and then smashed up and whatever, and worthless, or worth less at any rate. So now
Torah mentioned that specifically, that the mitzvah is even if you have to lose some of.
Fakir. If you don't lose anything by it, then you're obligated and not entitled to any compensation. In a way, I mean, they don't talk about it explicitly, but it sounds to me like it might be one of those cases, almost like Kofen al Midas Sedom, sort of like what we had earlier in the Masechta, that Zen and Avizavei Chaser, the other guy stands to gain, you're not losing anything by it. So therefore, you're not entitled to any compensation. You did a mitzvah, that's that. The mitzvah is your reward. But if you lost something in the course of being Mavriach Badari, then you should be entitled to compensation. Well, in this case, the guy did lose something. His payrus got smashed.
But the rule of the mitzvah, according to the Torah, is that you have to...
The Torah doesn't specify the details. The Torah says that you have a mitzvah, you have a mitzvah to return somebody's lost object and also to prevent somebody from suffering a loss. But there are rules. The Torah doesn't say anything about compensation or not. So it's left to the Chachamim to figure out in one case, yeah, in one case, not. So Tosfos gets into a long discussion about what exactly is considered Mavriach Ari. One thing, Tosfos brings various other cases in Shas where this concept of Mavriach Ari is brought up. We learned one of them in Nidorim. We had a case where somebody pays off somebody else's loan. Anyway, Tosfos goes into a long discussion of it and says, first of all, you need both criteria that our Gemara is saying over here. You need it to be midaita, and that you're not suffering a loss. It's not two different explanations, in other words, that one contradicts the other. You need both of them in order for it to be considered mavriach hari. Otherwise, if it's only one or the other, then yes, you are entitled to compensation. Also, then Tosfos goes and discusses further. It's also part of it. Also, gets into the question: was it going to be a definite? Was the other person going to suffer a definite loss or not? The classic case of Mavriach Ari is the lion is not necessarily is the lion right there where it's about to devour the animal or whatever. The lion is a little further away. It may come, it may not. What are you doing by Mavriach Ari Minichta Chaveri? You're accomplishing that now the other guy doesn't have to be concerned. What if the lion comes? You saved him from that. But if you're saving him from a clear and present danger, that's different, Tosfos says.
But you're still obligated to do the mitzvah, even if
you're the mitzvah is a mitzvah. We're talking about when are you entitled to compensation or versus not. That's what we're dealing with over here.
What I'd like to know is, I understand the compensation process, but I'd like to know up to what extent are you obligated to do the mitzvah in order to fulfill your obligation, regardless of the obligation to be reimbursed if ever lost.
So you're obligated to do you're obligated.
You put yourself in effect.
You're not necessarily putting yourself in
effect. I'm not saying necessarily.
Okay. No, you're not. You don't need to put yourself in sakana. You need to. You need to do what you need to be doing something. You need to be doing what's reasonable under the circumstances. Yeah, you know, you're not. We're going to have actually in a couple of days. Actually, we're going to have an interesting piece of Agata about a story of David HaMelech and his Giborim, where on the face of it, the Pasuk says that a couple of them broke through the lines and pushed him in order to get David some water from his favorite well. And he said that's not a right thing to do. It's not right to go on Mesiris Nefesh for such a minor thing. The Gemara is going to explain it wasn't actually water, it was a Psak Halacha, but whatever. The principle is the same thing, right? You're not expected to be Mesiris Nefesh for a minor thing. We're talking about, you know, we're talking about where you can, we're talking about a reasonable effort, yeah. Anyway, so Tosfos makes that distinction, whether it's an immediate danger or whether in the case of the Ari, it's not necessarily immediate. For example, in the case of paying off somebody's loan, Tosfos brings from Yerushalmi that the other person can argue, you know what, it wasn't necessarily I was going to have to pay off that loan. I could have maybe talked the guy into foregoing the loan. So therefore, you can't say that you were Mavriach Ari, for example, and that you're entitled to compensation. So then, by the way, Tosfos sort of digresses. Once we're talking about the concept of Mavriach Ari, Tosfos talks about an interesting concept. First of all, Tosfos mentions that actually a machlokus between Rabbeinu Gershom, the famous Rabbeinu Gershom Mor HaGadol, and Rashi, who's two generations later. Rashi was Talmud of Rabbeinu Gershom Talmidim.
Where was he, Rabbeinu Gershom?
Rabbeinu Gershom was in France and Germany. I think he lived in Mainz or Metz or one of those sort of borderish seas. Mainz, I think. Anyway, Tosfos brings Rabbeinu Gershom Paskin. If you have a guy, if a guy took away a Jew's house by force, now another Jew comes and buys it from the guy. Do we consider that Mavriach Ari Minichse Chaver? Rabbeinu Gershom Paskin, that no. He does. He is entitled to get compensated for it.
We'll get compensated.
The person who bought the house. The person who bought the house from the guy, who's now in a position to be able to return it to the original yid, fine, but he's entitled to be compensated for the trouble that he went to. On the other hand, so in other words, that we don't say that he's Mavriach Ari Minichse Chaver and shouldn't be entitled to compensation, because we said that he spent money on it. We just said if he spent money on it, then already it's not considered Mavriach Ari. And Tosfos mentions that Rashi understands it differently. Then, by the way, Tosfos brings a very interesting concept, the sort of digressing, speaking of this topic of goyim taking away Jewish property, Tosfos mentions an interesting concept. Let's look at it inside, actually. It's an interesting little tidbit that teaches us something about the social position of Jews in society of those days. The line begins, the line begins Yisrael. It's about 15 lines from the bottom. The last few words of the line. What if you have Jews who escape from their city because of pogroms or whatever it is? The local tsar, the local nobleman or baron or what have you, expropriate, take to that, confiscate their land, where there's no tax being owed on the land. Or maybe even if there is outstanding taxes on them. But the person before he ran away, he arranged for some other person to pay the land taxes for him. So the Reed says, if another yid were to come and buy that property from this nobleman, he has to return it to the owner. In other words, and he's entitled to compensation from the guy for what he spent on it. For the Hanah, the aims, this is a key thing, interesting thing, Tosfos says, the aims that din in a mahosa, you can't say that this is considered the local law. And there, and we know, we'll learn later on in the chapter, you know, not supposed to dinner, we'll learn towards the end of the chapter. You don't say that. So this is considered robbery on the part of the government. Because we see in the countries around us, the rule about Jews is they can be like knights. Parashim means knights. The general rule is that Jews have the social position of knights. They can live wherever they want. Meaning, you know, if you ever read up about medieval society, about feudalism, let me explain. It means like this. If you ever read up about feudalism, about the type of society they had in those times, in the time of Tosafot, several hundred years afterwards, you know there was a class of farmers, the peasants, the serfs, or whatever, where basically they were not allowed to move from one place to another without the permission of their local lord or baron or what have you.
I mean,
they were almost like a vodim, yeah. And then you had the higher classes. You had your knights, and you had your minor noblemen, and your et cetera, who can move freely around and then change their allegiances. What Tosafot is saying over here, Jews at that time had that same pattern. There was no such thing as these knights, let's say, the lowest of the gentry. Meaning, there's no such thing a Jew has to live in this place, and he's not allowed to leave this place without permission of the local poets or what have you. He can move freely around wherever he wants. Therefore, if a Kohen comes and takes his property after he leaves town, then that's geneva. That's stealing. He has no right to do that legally.
What, in any case, so they can move?
No, because
the fact that the Kohen come and take the land is
no. That's because that's the thing. Because that's the point that Tosafot is making. Over din machos to hayu Tosafot and shol yachzak hamosha b'nachos ha'yodim kriyei tamiyirei. So the law in these countries is the law is established that the baron is not allowed to take over Jewish, is not allowed to seize Jewish property when they leave his city. Meaning, in other words, if Jews were like serfs, then the law would be fine. A serf is not allowed to leave, and if he leaves, then he forfeits his property. It goes back to the landowner. Jews are not on that level. The local Goyish rulers know to respect Jewish property like that. And that's how they do in all the land of Burgundy. So if one particular kingdom wants to change the law and make a new law that we can take over Jewish property when they leave, because that's not a fair judgment at all. It's like a case that we'll learn later on towards the end of the sefer, a case of a tax collector who takes more than he's supposed to. That's not dinah d'machlokes, it's considered stealing. I just thought it was an interesting thing to bring that to give you an idea. We learn a lot about the position of Jews in medieval times. You know, and they didn't have an easy time of it, as we well know. But we see from the surface that your average Goyish ruler knew that Jews are not on the level of serfs, so something higher than that. Anyway, let's
it's rare, but it's still
okay. Let's return to the Gemara. Okay. So we're talking about that the animal fell into the garden. You have to ask, hey, chinoch, how did it fall in the first place? Rav Kahana says, for example, it slipped on its own urine. So it's an oina. So it's different. It slips. Rav Kahana is saying that, let's continue and we'll see. Rava should chafat the chaverta, whereas Rava says that we're talking about another one of the animals pushed it. So a person had a bunch of animals. He's walking them. They're walking down the street. One of them pushed another one, and so it fell into the garden. So, the one who says that the case is where one of them pushed the other, how much more so that would be the case if it slipped on its own urine, because that's for sure considered an unavoidable onus. You couldn't possibly have known that was going to happen. Where's the opinion that says that it slipped on its urine? But no, actually he would say that if one animal pushed the other, can you hear? Oh, wait a second.
Thank you.
But according to the opinion of Rava, that's saying that talking about that one pushed the other, according to Rav Kahana, who says that the case is where it slipped, it's only if it slipped, but if the other animal pushed it, pasha, then that is actually considered pshia from shalemis mashe izika. In that case, you would pay what the actual hezek, not just the hana. The amalei, because then the owner of the garden can tell him, who says you have to take all your animals together? You should have taken them down the street one at a time. Now, it's not, you don't have to necessarily. I mean, under normal circumstances, you're allowed to have a bunch of animals walk down the street at the same time. But at least he has an argument. At least he has an argument to make that it's not a total onus. There was something you could have done to prevent it. One animal pushed the other. That's the point. In other words, we're telling him, you could have avoided that. You could have had them go one by one. You didn't. Granted, I'm not going to call it that you did it deliberately or anything like that. But you can't call it a total, onus either. No, his own animals. He has a bunch of his own animals walking down the street. And one of them pushed the other and it fell into the garden. All this is only talking about if the animal was eating in one particular plot of land in the garden. But if it went from one plot to another, then you do pay what it was mazik. And the person talk about over here, that the basic idea would be, could the owner have gotten there in time to prevent it from going to the next aruga? Actually, no. Even if it goes from one plot to another, or even if it's in there all day, Adshah takes it the task of that. The owner is not hired for Mashi Zika unless the animal actually goes out and then comes back in with his dad. Because basically, again, even if it's ma'aruga la'aruga, it's still all in one field. The Torah says, v'shilachas bi'iro yuvir b'sde'acher. As long as it's in one field, you can't say that there was an original v'shilachas bi'iro, and therefore there's not a uvir b'sde'acher. Therefore, you can't make him responsible for uvir b'sde'acher. However, you shouldn't think that it means that the animal, that the owner knows that the animal left the barn and tassoladas, that he actually failed to lock the door properly. Doesn't mean that. No, actually, even if it went out with his das, meaning that he knew that it left, even if he actually put up a good door, he would still be chayav. My time, why is that? Because the owner of the garden can argue to him, given the alpha, once this animal already knows the way into this garden, so whenever it gets away, it's going to necessarily, it's going to go into this garden, because it knows already, it finds what to eat over there. So you should have known that. So according to Rashi, what it amounts to is, from now on, this owner is going to have to take better care of this animal, otherwise he's going to be chayav. There are other Rishonim who learn differently and say that, no, that can't be. I mean, we know there's no difference with Shein V'Regel between Tam and Mord. Effectively, the way you're just saying, it sounds like there is going to be a difference. So rather, they learn that what it means is if the animal leaves, you know that's going to go in there. Therefore, you're responsible for getting there as soon as possible in order to take care of the situation. But not that you're going to have to do a shmita mo'ala. Another way of looking at it that before we can say is, you're going to be responsible from now on. Make sure you don't take the animal along that road again. Don't let the animal go along that road, because then it will find some way of getting into that garden. But you're not obligated to lock it up to make sure that it can't get out. You just have to do regular shmita kosa, just like you were doing up until. I may have to cut it short, yeah. We can have somebody else take over and continue explaining it. That's good. So, yeah. Sorry.